From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armenia, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk words. Let's talk B words as we take the second step in our series looking at the hardest SAT words there have ever been. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, and joining me as they do each week, New York Times bestselling authors and language experts Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Kathy Petras at your home in Armia, Ross at your home in Toronto. I'm going to get us started because we've been yelling at each other for about 10 or 15 minutes prior to this because the letter of the day today is B for broken, which is what Ross's computer is.
I know. Gosh.
We are going to do something that we sometimes don't do, which is to continue a series that we started, and we're going to look at the most difficult SAT words, in this case, beginning with the letter B. We did the letter A
right. A
few weeks back, and so we're actually moving on in the alphabet, and we're going to jump into the letter B.
We're
today.
All the way up to number two.
That's yay! Right.
But first, Fletcher, we got an email from Doug in Seattle. And he saw this list online and said, why is this the case?
I actually thought this was fascinating, so go on.
And we have cuttlefish, which is not a fish. Starfish is not a fish. Jellyfish is not a fish. Shellfish is not a fish. Silverfish is not a fish. What's going on?
Okay.
Can you tell us, Fletcher?
Well, the short answer is no. The longer answer is... There's a podcast, a British podcast, associated with the British quiz show QI, and the podcast is called No Such Thing as a Fish. I think it's because maybe there isn't actually just a thing that is a fish. I haven't looked into this, although I feel like I should have. But like, what actually is a fish? You're saying all of these things aren't fish, but what is a fish?
That's a really good question. And you actually have pretty much come around to what the whole problem is that, what is a fish? I mean, they're not fish, but what is a fish? The technical definition is a vertebrate which has gills and fins adapting it for living in the water.
But that is the definition now.
Now.
Right. And that's the key. In Old English, fish tended to refer to any animal that lives entirely in the water.
Aha.
So therefore, we're covering cuttlefish, starfish, jellyfish, and shellfish. However, do you know what a silverfish is, Fletcher?
Yeah,
do you know what that is or not?
They're those creepy little things that eat your books.
Yeah, that's right. What I was thinking. I hate finding them in my books.
Right. And those are also called, why are they called fish? Basically, there's some thought that because they kind of wiggle like fish, which I don't think is very convincing, but that's one of the theories why they're called that. But they've been called other things as well. So I think it just...
I've called them a lot of things.
But I mean, because they've also been known as silver tail or fish tail. So I'm wondering if possibly like they have like a kind of three-pronged little, like three little things coming out of the butt, back. So maybe it looks sort of like a fish tail. Yeah, like a trident or something. So that could be.
I just want to say, though, Ross, you neglected the last part, which is part, to me, was the punchline. Because it says cuttlefish, not fish. Starfish, not fish. Jellyfish, not fish. Shellfish, not fish. Silverfish, not fish. Seahorse, fish.
Wow, yes. You know, that one really gets me, though, because as a kid, there was a big hurricane once and along the Jersey Shore, and I found all these dead seahorses. And if anything doesn't look like a fish, I have to say a seahorse does it. It looks like a lot like a horse to me.
We've talked about this before with narrowing and widening, broadening, and how in the old days you had like meat was like, what was it again, Ross? Beef, meat was everything that was edible at one point, right?
Well, beef has been always beef, Kath, unfortunately.
No, but the meat, there was some, I can't remember.
Meat was basically food in general.
Yeah.
Right, that's what I'm thinking.
Like your zucchini could be meat.
Yes.
Well, we
exactly.
go back to mincemeat, which people always think about, like mincemeat pie is not, I mean,
right.
was never meat.
Right.
Right.
So, I mean, that we go back to that with this with fish, the opposite way.
Mm-hmm. Anyway, let's go on. We're going to do the most difficult SAT words, beginning, as Fletcher indicated, with B. In some cases, Fletcher, you're going to have to spell the word. In other cases, you're going to have to choose the right definition. And in other cases, you're going to have to do both.
Ooh.
So let's begin. Okay, blandishment. I think, Fletcher, you know how to spell this one. You're not going to bother with that, right?
Blandishment. Well, I mean, it probably is spelled like it sounds. I don't really think I know this word.
Well, we're going to see if you do. We're going to give you a choice of three. It means one, insipid commentary. Two, the act of watering something down. Three, flattery.
I think it's flattery. I like the second one. I like that. That was a cute one that you guys made. The act of watering something down to make it more bland, I suppose, is what you're getting at. that sounds like flattery to me. Blandishment.
You're right. Completely correct. Flattering speech from the 1590s, and that which pleases or an allurement. It comes from originally from the Latin. Blandiri, to flatter, soothe, or caress. So you got it perfectly.
I would like to say, Fletcher, you said you weren't sure about it, which is just because the OED reported it rare back in the 17th century. So,
oh, wow. It was rare not, even by then.
Yeah, no, which fascinates me because I've run across it. And what was it? Johnson said he only knew it from Milton. And Milton is I don't think most of us like run around reading Milton these days. So
that one got me, but for some reason, that one I thought was more common. Didn't you, Kathy?
I was just going to ask you, Ross, did we read certain books that had
I don't know.
Because I knew it immediately.
Yeah. No, and Fletcher, you know a lot of words and things, but when you said you didn't know it, I thought like, but it's everywhere. Well, it isn't.
I didn't know the definition. I have seen the word. Okay, so it's not non-existent.
But for Kathy and me, we must have read something, Kathy, back in, I don't know where, but for some reason where it just hammered into our heads. Because
yeah.
It does seem to, because, I mean, what Kathy said is true. Everywhere it's said to be rare, and you reiterated that it was rare. But for both of us, we didn't think it was that rare, which means that we must have seen it together in some rare context and then thought it wasn't rare. Anyway.
Are these really SAT words?
Yes.
Well, most of them are, yeah.
Wow, I really question how useful it is to have a word that was considered rare in the 17th century on,
it's
like, what's the point?
To teach kids that life is unfair, Fletcher.
Yeah,
don't
okay,
you
that's
understand?
Okay, I get that, yeah.
But let's also be fair to the SAT people. These are words that are found online that are said to train you for the SATs. They're not necessarily, I mean, I can't vouch that this word has been on the SATs. I don't, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
These are words that you'll have like prep for the SAT. A lot of them are like that as well. Some of them claim that they are from the SATs, but we can't be completely sure.
So let's move on.
Yes.
Now, the next one is interesting because this one is, Kath and I both originally got this wrong years ago. And I said grass quickly, but not really. Bromide. Can you spell it?
B-R-O-M-I-D-E.
Right. Is it one, a soda drink? Two, a compound of bromine and another metal. Three, a dull, conventional person or trite saying.
Yeah, I think it's that last one. Although it was smart for you to put something about minerals or metals in there, because that's pretty attractive.
This is pretty cool. You got them both correct. It's a compound of bromine and another metal. And it is a dull conventional. This was a trick one, and you actually got the trick. And do you want to hear the embarrassing thing? Is for years, Kathy and I both thought bromide was a soda drink. So,
well, remember when we were kids, it was bromo seltzer. I think that's the problem.
I think that's what did it.
Yeah.
Well, it also, there was a drink, they used it medicinally as a sedative or something, which was a bromide.
Well, that's the bromine in another metal, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, Kathy. I don't know. All I know is I thought bromide, Coca-Cola, you know, it's like whatever.
Ross, do you feel that you've been beleaguered?
I do indeed.
Wait, before we jump to beleaguered, are bromide the metal related one and bromide the other definition, are those two words related?
Yeah, it's because bromides were used as a sedative. It became a humorist in the 1900s wrote a book called Are You a Bromide? Clever title.
Yeah.
And so it became, it was like, you know, are you putting people to sleep in effect?
Okay, that's,
which is cute, actually. I like that.
It is cute. It's funnier than I realized.
Mm-hmm.
Moving on to beleaguered, it sounds like.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's do it as like the present tense, beleaguer. Can you spell it?
B-E-L-E-A-G-U-E-R? Did I get that? Did I get all
that? Like a big leaguer. Yes. Okay, now, does it mean in a very difficult situation and then of a place surrounded by armed forces aiming to capture it or force surrender? Or three, excessively fatigued, to be excessively fatigued, I should say.
I usually see it as that last one. That second one seemed clever to me, as in you are surrounded by leagues of sieging forces. But to be beleaguered, I usually see as being, yeah, excessively fatigued.
That's what we would have guessed. We both did that. The correct answer is number two. It is surrounded by armed forces aiming to capture it. Oh, and it you're is. Not and you're not surrounded by leagues. The key thing is your leger or bed camp army lair is B, which is a round from the Proto-Germanic. So it is surrounded. Your camp is surrounded. That's where it comes from. I would not have known this.
Well, how do people use it now?
Well, now when you're beleaguered, I think you're overwhelmed by outside forces.
Oh. And the reason it seems like that ought to be the excessively fatigued is because you are being worn down by whatever those outside forces are.
Yeah, you're being eroded by the besiegement.
So the word is really about the thing that's being done that then might make you tired or whatever. But it's about the siege, essentially.
You're right. It's the act upon you that's causing you now.
But to the extent where I think the third definition is really, in essence, correct, I would use it far more in number three than number two. I would, I'm not usually in a situation where I'm attacking forces, are attacking me in a camp. But I would say beleaguered in that sense, I would instantly assume when I say beleaguered that I do feel fatigued.
Yeah.
And I do feel overwhelmed by outside circumstances, which in effect, you are.
Well, you are.
Yeah.
I mean,
like,
you're surrounded.
I'm not beleaguered if I just stayed up all night watching movies.
Right.
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 You don't
that think would be that. Really weird. That, yeah.
You don't just think excessively fatigued. You think excessively fatigued because of some really oppressive outside force.
Correct. Precisely. It's onerous, like, rah, around you. Mm-hmm. Yes.
So, yeah. Okay. All right. I don't feel so bad then.
Okay. The next one was really interesting because Kathy knew it. I did not. And I'm curious if you do, Fletcher. The word is bedizen. We need to spell it and we need to definition it.
No, we do not.
Because we're beleaguered.
Bedizen? I don't know. I don't know that I've ever heard this in my life.
Okay, I'm gonna give you the word. I'm gonna let you not spell it then.
We're gonna give you
what it because I'm a nice person.
Okay, you see it?
There we go.
Okay, spell it now.
Okay, sure. I'll spell it for everyone who also has never heard this. Bedizen. I would not have thought that it was bedizen. I would have thought bedizen.
I would have thought so too. It means one to make dizzy. Two, to dress up. Three, to afflict with toxins.
Whoa. Well, afflicting somebody with toxins could make them dizzy too, couldn't it?
That's a good point. Sort of like beleaguered, we have two definitions of the kind of word. Beleaguered with bedizened. Beleaguered and bedizened.
Well, I'm beginning to doubt myself now with my guessing abilities. Obviously, I don't know the answer. Let's just go with that first one, to make dizzy. To bedizen, to be dizzying.
Let's let the person who knew what the word was tell us this one, because you knew it instantly, Kat.
I did. It's so funny. Yeah. Maybe it's of those sort of books I read when I was younger. It's to dress up. Usually sort of tawdry. You bedizen. It's sort of tacky. It's like you're bedazzling yourself, to speak. Yeah, I knew it immediately. But oddly enough, it sounds to me like I just said bedazzle, which I actually am all for. I like bedazzling. But it's the roots. It came from spinning thread, the word bedizen, because you use a distaff and then you would twist it. And it came from a verb dizen, which was to dress a distaff with flax, I guess, twist it around it. And then it came into English and then it became dizen and then it'd be dressing up. And then it became dressing up kind of tackily.
It was so weird. I had never, I mean, it was really interesting because I had never heard the word. I never saw the word. And I expected, like, no one else to know the word. And Kat goes, oh, yeah, to
dress up. I did.
I know. But you might say, well, let's still steal the next one. A bourgeois might be bedizen clothing or whatever. Let's whatever. I don't even know. Let's get away from bedizen.
Bedizening is perfectly bougie, but okay.
Felter, let's spell it. And then we probably figure you know the word meaning. So we're going to ask you the derivation.
Bourgeois.
Right. Ooh, fancy. So spell Fletcher. It.
Bourgeois.
Yes. Very good.
I never can spell this.
I always do it wrong. I know it when I see it. Then I always go, I always do something wrong with it. However, we're going to do the derivation. It's derived from one, the bourse, i.e. bankers working in a French bank. Two, from the noble Borghese family of Siena. Three, from an old French word meaning town dweller.
Wow. Like bourg. Let's go with that one. Town dweller.
Excellent,
oh,
Fletcher.
Shoot. We thought we might be able to catch you. I was proud of the Boris was, I thought, a good one. That was
I thought
awesome.
The Boris was good, too. It comes actually from the original, from the Frankish burg, which we know is in Hamburg or whatever, mm-hmm. city. You got to come. And then it became later city dwellers, you know, citizens of middle class, on and on. I love what we have a book here from the Dolly Dialogues from 1907. Bourgeois is an epithet which the riffraff apply to what is respectable, and the aristocracy to what is decent.
You know, let me ask you this. What do you feel the connotation is when you call something bourgeois?
I think sort of Biedermeier kind of stuffy middle class is what I think.
Yeah. Okay, what if you called something bougie?
That's basically trying to criticize someone for being stuffy upper middle class.
Oh, but someone
class.
Who is bougie, I think, is like super, like proudly middle class, like, you know, running around. Kind of for me, when you say someone's bougie, it's not nouveau riche, but it's sort of like has that connotation to me. I mean, I make fun of myself and I say, like, sometimes I'm bougie, you know, when I'm being like wine and baguettes.
Well, here's a really funny one, though, from our French. Why do Americans think the word bougie means fancy when it literally means candle? I forgot about that. It does in French. And speaking of bougie, we're going to go with a similar sounding word, burgeon. Can you spell it?
Like a burgeoning.
Yes.
Like sturgeon, B-U-R-G-E-O-N.
Wow. Very good. This was most closely related to which word? Bourgeois. Two, pimple. Three, dungeon.
Oh, wow. Had Kathy not laughed, I might have chosen pimple. I still want to choose pimple. I'm going with pimple.
Oh,
I
Fletcher.
Can't draw you off anymore, can I?
Know.
Well, you know why. I mean, because a pimple is something that sort of emerges from the skin, right?
Right. It burgeons. It grows.
Yes.
It sprouts.
Right.
It blossoms. Exactly. That's exactly where it comes from.
That's always what I've thought about my pimples is how they
blossoming. But it does come from bourgeon in old French, a bud, a shoot, a pimple.
Oh, okay.
No one's really sure where it comes from. It could come from old High German bourgeon, to raise, lift up.
I don't buy it.
Or it could come from old French, or it could come from English native development from bourgeoin. A bud.
I like the fact that it died out in the 18th century, except for a term in gardening, and then it came back in poetry, you know, burgeoning youth or something.
Oh, right. Yeah.
But we would not say, I have a burgeon on my face. It bothers me. So
you might say, I have a burgeoning pimple, though. Would you?
Know?
I mean,
would you?
No. You could say a pimple is burgeoning. Never mind. This is like, nah. Okay, the next word is
buckle. Not as in the
not as in the belt.
Yeah.
Buckle.
We can't use it in a sentence, I just realized, because
no, I was going to say the same thing, Kath. I know.
Okay, then I'll just make up a spelling, because I don't know what this is, but how about something like B-U-C-H-A-L?
Close.
That's awfully close.
No okay. cigar, but very close. It's B-U-C-C-A-L.
Oh, okay. All right.
It's an adjective.
Okay, buckle. Oh, it's an adjective. Okay.
The origin is most closely related to hide from a deer or a cow prepared for tanning. 2, the cheek. 3, referring to signs written above medieval chants, giving an indication of the direction or movement of pitch.
That is an extremely long definition. So I'm going to go with the shortest one, which is the cheek.
Correct.
You got it.
Yeah.
Fletcher's on the move.
Tell me more about this.
It comes from the Latin. Was that pronounced, Ross? Buca?
Buca.
I know this because when I had to get root canals, remember they said it was broken from the B to the C, from the buckle to the something, a cuspidor or something.
Yeah, that's funny because I have the same thing with the dental stuff from years ago.
Right.
I think we both knew it because of that. Not even the Latin. I just knew it because of that. Exactly.
So it means like related to the cheek?
Yes.
Correct.
Okay.
But it makes sense because you've got the word bouche in French, right? Oh, and then in Spanish, boca for mouth.
Yeah. No, it's exactly.
Which leads to our next word, bucolic. It's an adjective.
Mm-hmm.
I believe you know this word, but can you spell the word?
Bucolic.
Okay, again, we're going to say, what is it related to? The cheek or buckle.
Uh-huh.
Country life. Or the signs written above medieval chants giving indication of the direction of movement of pitch.
I thought the definition at least was related to country life. So I guess I'll go there. But you guys really want me to, you're going to get me there sooner or later, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to keep on going with that medieval chants.
But yes, it is related to country life. And interestingly enough, the other week we talked about boo from cow. Mm-hmm. And this comes from, part of it does come from the boo for cow. Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Which is interesting because I would not think of that.
Yeah, bucolicos in Greek. Yeah.
Okay, so like life amongst the cows.
Yep, cultivate, colere would be the, colere is, in Latin is to till the ground or whatever, and you're hanging around with cows. Yep. That's
somehow
it.
When they refer to houses as bucolic, though, or the countryside, I'm not picturing the hanging around with cow aspect.
I don't know. It's sort of nice having a cow outside, doing something, doing what cows do.
Yeah, but you step in what it's doing, and then everything just like goes downhill.
Yeah, but it's all clean. It's not like...
It's all clean.
Until it's on your shoe. Okay, this is our final word, is bevy.
Like a bevy of quail.
Very good.
B-E-V-Y?
Correct. Yes. Okay, now, it's as you said, a group, often used, and it first appeared in Middle English. But what type of group was it first used for?
Okay.
There are 4 correct answers.
And I'm guessing quail is not one of them.
Okay, ready?
Yeah.
1, knights. Number 2, nobles or royalty. Number 3, quail and or larks. Number 4, young ladies. Number 5, eagles. Number 6, rabbits or conies. Number 7, wolves.
That's an old word for rabbit.
And number 8, deer.
All right, so that was a lot of things. Let's group them together a little bit. We have the people, knights, nobles and or royalty, and young ladies. Okay, so there's one group. We have birds, quail, larks, and eagles, and we have the rest of them, the rabbits, the wolves, and the deer. If there are 4 correct answers, this is very difficult because there's...
But you can, I mean, some of the groupings, like for example, if you pick quail and or larks, that counts as 2.
All right. So, oh wait, but eagles, but that doesn't really fit. They just happen to be birds. Okay, this is fun, but hard.
Okay.
But okay, there's 4. If I can do it that way.
Okay, yeah, just give us the knight, 4.
The people then. Knights, nobles, royalty, and young ladies.
Actually, Fletcher, you're very wrong.
Okay. The only reason I chose that is because I can make 4 out of it.
That's good. I think this is more logic than anything else. But bevy is really illogical, and we're really confused by this word, the origin of the word. The original use of bevy was for deer,
uh-huh,
quail, larks, and young ladies.
There's no logic in there whatsoever.
No. Wow, yeah.
No one has any idea what's going on with this.
So you could say there was a bevy, and then people would just pretty much have no idea what you meant.
Well, you'd have to say a bevy of.
A bevy of
deer. You would not just say, oh, there was a bevy over by that lake, because that could have been ladies, deer, or larks. Right.
You know? I mean, for example, Kathy would go, hark, a bevy of larks, and we'd go look at the larks. That's what would happen.
Would I really say hark, Ross, do you think?
But if you said hark, a bevy of eagles, people would say, what? What?
What? Exactly.
A bevy can't be eagles. It's young ladies. Or possibly deer.
Yeah. Or quail, Fletcher. Let's don't forget quail.
I love the fact they were trying to figure out where it came from, and no one knows. Now you can use bevy for any group. You would say a bevy of... Yeah. Appetizers. I've never said that, though. Do you guys ever look a bevy of appetizers?
No, I can agree that I've never said that before.
But you know, have we ever said bevy? I don't even remember ever using the word at all. I know what it means. Bevy.
Yeah, I've seen bevy of beauties in old films. You would say like a Busby Berkeley.
Yeah, you might
film.
A Busby Berkeley film. Yeah,
that's about it, though.
I would never say a bevy of reporters. They have an example here. A bevy of reporters.
Oh, really? I wasn't going to say, but as soon as you said that, it sounds perfectly normal to me.
Does it really?
Yes, absolutely. It absolutely does.
Golly. But they said that they think it came from the Anglo-French bevet, which they don't know where it came from. And someone said maybe it's from drinking bout, or maybe it's a misprint of bever, as in beverage. No one's sure. And they said maybe the original sense was, if it's the drinking, it was birds like clustered around a puddle or pool for drinking.
That seems like really weird, too. Here's something. Hey, guys, want to hear something interesting, though? 1860 was the high use of bevy. Then it had like a little bump up in 1900. This is in books, so we can't really, you know, it's Google Ingram. Then it went down in this 40s, 50s, 60s, 70s, and 80s. And then it's shot up in the 2000s.
Yeah.
I think 2020 is a big bevy word, bevy time.
Yeah. I think people kind of use it just to be cute.
Yeah.
It seems quite bougie to me.
Well, let's all have a bromide.
Crack open a bromide.
Oh, gee.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetras@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
No matter what happens in Washington, the NPR Politics Podcast is here for you. For the latest news, insights, and analysis from the election and beyond, listen to the NPR Politics Podcast.